on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday, May 1st edition of InvestTalk. We're here to help you acquire the tools to become an above average investor. Above average investors. Now, this is about enabling the average guy and girl to realize better than average results, whether you're managing your own money or you work with a professional. It doesn't matter. It's all about turning the possibility of growing your money into a probabilities, from possibilities to probability. In a falling market, what this means, because everybody thinks above average investing means, oh, well, I go up more than average. Well, that's true. It also means you don't go down as much either. You don't suffer as much. So it's both ways. To become above average, you want to be able to cut your losses to some degree and run up your stocks if you can. It doesn't necessarily mean you're the best in the world or the worst. It's just that you, over the long haul, steady returns are what you're after. Now, every Friday morning, our premium newsletter goes out. I send it to the subscribers and, of course, our client list. So on Friday, I'd like to give you an idea of what I talked about on the newsletter today. First, on the current market conditions, I mentioned a full week of economic reports came out this week. You had earnings numbers, you had a Federal Reserve's meeting and a statement from them, besides a lot of economic statistics. And even China had some economic statistics out. So I talked about that. With all that noise going on, what did the stock market do for the week? Well, it was kind of down. Now, today had a really good rebound day from yesterday's pretty stiff down. So the market is now, for the week is just down slightly, not a lot. So that, that's what our economic statistics did, or the news didn't really help the market, really didn't hurt the market. There's not a lot of reasons for the market to go up, and there's not a lot of reasons why the market going to go down either, but it won't stay that way. Mentioned that in the newsletter. It doesn't stay. And the portfolio management section talked about investing overseas and about the risks and the diversification that presents to you. The consumer watch section, it talked about the merits of the flexible spending accounts, FSAs. Those are for the for medical expenses. And also employee stock purchase plans. Talked about those briefly. And that's a look at the premium newsletter. We'll give you a couple. I also gave a couple of ETF, high dividend paying ETF, as something to put on your watch list. It's $9.99 a month. You only have to buy 1 month at a time, and you can get your money back if you don't like it. So there's a discount for a year if you sign up for a year, but it's up to you. And it comes out every Friday. So let's turn those questions you want into answered questions. You can call right now. 24-hour listener line is always open. You can talk to us live right now, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. So that means right now. But you can call anytime. 888-99-CHART is how you reach me.
Steve, Justin, Michelle Davis from Lakewood, Colorado. Here's my question. In light of the bond market, and there's more than $1 trillion in bond funds and bonds themselves, how do you foresee that market going forward, we'll say in the next 5 to 10 years, in light of interest rate risk and demographics with the baby boomers taking distributions in addition to inflation? Thanks again.
Well, I think the bond market's going forward is going to have a lot tougher time than it has in the last 5-10 years. When the overall environment is interest rates are going down, which we've had for 30 plus years, the bond market has a lot easier time. And what you see is people having a bias thinking that bonds are going to perform like they have in the past as continuing on to the future. It's not going to happen. It's going to change. The markets always change. Right now, we are looking at 5 years from now, plus very good chance that the interest rates will be higher. And a rising interest rate environment hurts the value of bond funds, but that doesn't mean you don't buy any. Doesn't mean you don't buy bonds for your portfolio. because they are very good for protection of your assets, for getting some income, but don't think they're going to be the stellar performers they were in the past. That's all I'm saying. Now, we have a program, our income program, we actually buy the bonds themselves for the clients, and we buy, you know, 10, 15 of them so that so we can diversify them, and we own by high quality, but we hold them to maturity. So you buy them and just hold on to them. What do you care if they go up and down in value as long as you get all your money back when they mature? Bond funds and ETFs, well, bond ETFs, they don't do that. They don't have a maturity date. So they don't go back to the value that they were. Of course, the bonds inside them do, but they constantly reinvest them. So if interest rates go down, generally bond funds go down with it. I'm sorry. Interest rates go up, bond funds value goes down. So I think they have a place, I really do, in any portfolio, especially retirement type portfolio. But any young person, don't even consider bonds. Investors who are millionaires in the making are different. There's a different makeup of those people than millionaires that already are millionaires. So investors who are millionaires to become millionaires, in other words, they're investing in the market and have good salaries, are different kinds of people than existing millionaires. Emerging millionaires, are you one of them? That's going to be one of our talking points today. Also, made in the USA is on the rise. I've talked about that in the last few years, and I got some statistics to prove it. Isn't that fun? I'm going to share them with you. In this market, I think risk management is paramount. In the market we're in today, you have to have some risk management tools. I'm going to share some strategies about how to do that. And finally, more Americans are paying 50% or more on housing costs, more than they were in 2007. Remember, it was the year just before the crash. More than then, before the economic slump, recession, deep, big recession, more people now are paying more than 50% of their housing costs, 50% of their income in housing costs. That's a lot. I'm going to talk about that, explore that. Why? That's a big no-no, by the way. So what happened in the market today? We had a great, pretty good darn rebound from yesterday's weak numbers. The Dow was up 182 points today, NASDAQ up 64, and the S&P up 23, making up for almost all yesterday's losses, which is great. But the week, the market was down. And if you're looking at a chart, which of course I always do every day of my life, it seems like, I'm sure it is, you'll see that we are, if you're looking at the S&P 500, yesterday it was right at the high it made in the end of the year, right at the high, because it came down to that high, and that bounced up today. So is that strong support? Do we see support at that number? Now that means the S&P is up less than 1%, but it is up for the year so far. And we're in May 1st. So we've had 4 months of sideways movement, basically. It's going to break up or break down. It's going to do one or the other. It's not going to just stay in this sideways trend. It could stay in the sideways trend for a while, but the odds are very, very much against it as we approach the summer. I mean, most investors, the investor world that we're in, think of May as the summertime, as summertime approaching, and we react to what we think is going to happen in the summertime. That's why they're all saying this, go away in May in the market, go away in May, because they're anticipating a lower market. Doesn't always happen, though. And don't get carried away. Don't try to guess that it's going to happen. Don't try to time it. That's not going to work. I got some strategies. We'll talk about that. Each month I schedule my individual checkups for a limited number of our listeners. I can only do a few of these on a daily basis. I schedule a few days a week, a month to do these. And so these are informal meetings. I look at account balances and what people have and try to give them some guidance maybe on their 401k and their, you know, that kind of things. It's a discussion. My next day in the San Jose area will be May 6th. That's next week, next Wednesday. And I have just one spot left, everybody. So if you're interested in meeting with me, you better get in line, better find out. And to get that spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, some claim that you can do better than 1% yield without taking extraordinary risks with your money, but you may have to dig around some. Are there smarter places to park your cash? That's our talking point for Monday, May 4th, and we hope you'll listen to that podcast. We continue now with Invest Talk, and coming up this hour on Invest Talk 101, how to keep your emotions at bay when you're making investment choices. That's coming up later this hour. Now, the number to reach us is 888-99-CHART. Steve is waiting for your call right now.
There was a recent study by Fidelity about millionaires in the making. And what was interesting, I thought, about the study was the difference of millionaires in the making with current existing millionaires. Because there's a difference. Now, what do the findings show? 68% of the emerging affluent investors are women versus 40% who are currently millionaires. So 68% are women versus 40% now. 75% of the emerging affluent are white, and you would think, well, that's quite a bit. But there's 91% that are current millionaires. So there's a lot more ethnicity coming in. The emerging affluent are on average 40 years old. The existing millionaires are on average 62. Only 1% of the emerging affluent are retired compared to with 51% of the current millionaires. So that would be normal. I mean, if you're 40 and 62, you know, that's not surprising. Emerging affluent investors have a median annual household income of $125,000. $125,000. Okay, millionaires who are employed, the ones who are still working, have $200,000 or more. The emerging affluent have similar careers. So this tells you a lot. If you want to become rich, here's where you should be. You should be in these industries: information technology, medical fields, finance and accounting. Okay? That's where the emerging affluent, they have the similar careers as those people are already affluent, and that's where they are. 48% of emerging affluent have financial advisors, where 70% of millionaires do. So as you get older, you seek professional help, it looks like. I thought these numbers were pretty interesting. One more, 56% of emerging affluent feel confident that their investment strategies are aligned with their long-term financial goals, 56% of them, whereas 88% of millionaires feel that way. They're more comfortable in what investment goals they have and getting there. Might be just because of experience. They have a lot more years in the markets. So one of the key things is, if you want to be a millionaire, the study said that you got to start early. Start investing early. Your 401k, your IRA, that kind of thing. Don't be slow about it. Invest Talk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask. And we'll answer on the next one. And the number is always the same, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Matt in Columbus, listening on iTunes. Steve, I was wondering what you thought of Compass Minerals. C as in cat, M as in Mary, C as in Paul. I own a little bit of it, and I was thinking about getting some more. Have a good day.
Okay, CMP, Cat, Mary, Paul. Compass Minerals Incorporated, they're out of Kansas. They are a $2.9 billion company, so about a $3 billion company. That would be a small cap company. Produces salts for highway, de-icing, water conditioning, food preparation, agricultural, industrial applications. So, salt. Earnings are going up nicely, 10-15% per year. Sales have been growing, but not this most recent quarter. They've kind of fell. Pays a 3% dividend. And the stock is not overly expensive. Not cheap. I would be a great buy at 82. Right now it's at 88, so might see if it gets down there to pick it up. That's probably what I would do. What moves stock prices? Do I need to learn economics to be a good investor? Can I keep it simple and still succeed? What is your question on this Friday? I'll try to answer it. 888-99-CHART. You can connect with InvestTalk right now.
This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President.
Okay, let's get back to the phones, okay? 888-99-CHART is our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. It's Henning from Ukraine. I hope you're well, listening to you on the podcast. My stock today is Palo Alto Networks, ticker symbol PANW. And I was wondering what you thought of its growth potential, what your valuation is, and what your outlook for the internet security sector in general is. Thanks again, listening to your answer, and have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Every time I hear from him, I worry about him being in Ukraine. I just worry that, you know, there's going to be a lot more turmoil there. Well, Palo Alto Networks, it's headquartered in Santa Clara in Silicon Valley, provides network security infrastructure products for enterprises, service providers, and government entities. It's a $12 billion company, so it's a big cap company. It's bigger than most people think. Now, it has great growth, 50% per quarter sales growth. Sales growth, 50%. But sales, we're only talking about 800 million sales a year, so it's kind of expensive. I mean, you're talking about it's going to make 78 cents a share in 2015 after making 33 cents last year. That's 136% growth. And then next year, it's going to grow another 100% earnings to $1.56. So you have really, really good growth. The stock is at $150. So if you're going to be really generous, and you multiply the growth rate by next year's earnings, and the fifth, if you're going to use between 50 and 100%, you can say that the stock price is on the upper end of being expensive. Okay, it's expensive, but it's gone. It's marched up from $70 a year ago to $150 today, over 100% in a year. Now, this is a very good company. It has good, solid numbers. The only concern you have is it's expensive. So, if it misses its numbers, the first time it misses its number, it's going to get crushed. My personal opinion is there's going to be a correction probably sometime during the summer, and this should correct nicely with it, with the rest of the market, and that's when you want to think about buying it. Not here. Too expensive. I will say this. It looks like there's a lot of support at $150 right where it is. But it's a high-risk play. High risk. Good, solid company. Nothing wrong with the company. The high-risk part is just very expensive. But it deserves to be very expensive because of the growth rate. So you got that, you know, tug of war there. Will it grow another 50%, 100% next year, and the year after that, and the year after that? Well, at some point it won't. And that's the point where it will start to fall. PANW is the symbol, everybody. PANW, Palo Alto Networks. Made in USA is on the comeback. It's on the rise. As I have been saying for several years, I had several conferences about this year or two ago. And how do I know this? Well, let's take a look at some figures. 60,000 manufacturing jobs were added in 2014. 60,000 manufacturing jobs were added in 2014. In 2003, coming out of that recession from the dot-com, we only added 12,000. 50,000 jobs were offshored in last year. So 60,000 were onshored, you know, coming back, or manufacturing jobs increase here. But 50,000 of them we sent out, right? Well, in 2003, we sent out 150,000 jobs. Now it's 50,000 last year. That's a 10,000 net increase. That's the first time in 20 years we've had a net increase of manufacturing jobs in this country. So, first time in 20 years. Okay, you're going to say, well, 10,000 jobs, that's not a lot. Hey, It's the direction that you're interested in. What were the catalysts? Is the catalyst such that it will continue to be the catalyst? Will the direction stay in this? Kind of, because the main reason is the cost overseas, making onshore and here manufacturing more attractive. You don't have to, the salaries have gone up, in particular China, okay? And shipping costs were, expensive. Now, low oil prices probably means that we would, our manufacturing jobs would slow down. But they make these decisions, they meaning the big CEOs of these big companies when they bring, they make these decisions looking out 5, 10, 15 years, not just next year and the year after. So they're not looking at what the high cost of the dollar, the high dollar is this year. It's more of a long-term thing for them. One last point. Many people don't realize this. The U.S. is the second largest country exporter. As a country, we are the second largest exporter. We're only behind Japan as an exporter. Most people think that we don't export much. We export a lot. A lot. You just don't hear the news. You don't hear it on the news. You hear about, imports coming into us. You don't talk about how big our export sector is. Okay, by the way, if you're an InvestTalk Insider, you can access our webinar on this very subject. So join for free on InvestTalk.com. I talk about these jobs. Now, how to keep emotions out of investing? How do you keep emotions out of investing? Most people think they do, and they don't. Maybe we can refine that a little bit. That's coming up next on InvestTalk 101. It's going to be featured in the next half hour. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and I hope you'll stay with us on InvestTalk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Have you tried our free risk analysis tool? It really doesn't take much time, and it's the first step in determining whether your present retirement portfolio is in line with your risk tolerance. You've heard us talking about it. Why not give it a try? Just go to investtalk.com and click on Free Risk Analysis Tool. This is the Friday, May 1st edition of InvestTalk with Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. Some claim that you can do better than 1% yield without taking extraordinary risks with your money. But you may have to dig around some. Are there smarter places to park your cash? That's our talking point on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, our favorite way to communicate with you is through the phone on the radio. Our direct line, again, 888-992-4278. We can talk anytime you want.
Hi, I'm a podcast listener from New York. You have a great show. Thank you for the education. I was wondering what you thought about purchasing Twitter now that it's blown off some steam and it's a much better value, what you thought of the prospects, and if you're going to buy it, what the chart tells you a good price would be. Thanks very much, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
The chart says about $35, $36 for the stock, Twitter. TWTR is the symbol. But you have to, and they've collapsed from 51, 52 in one day down to 38, 39. Okay, so why? Earnings. It's all about earnings. Well, mostly because they're adding users much slower in the mobile space, and they're failing to monetize the users as well as they expected. In other words, making money. I mean, that's what the problem is. So they still grow 74% this most recent quarter in sales. But the quarters before that, they were always over 100%. So this is 74. And they made only 7 cents a share versus 12 cents the last quarter. So people are really nervous, got very nervous and sold off. Now, it looks like about $35 to $36 So it's right now 37.84. Still went down today. Went down 3 days ago. Day before yesterday. Yesterday and now today. It, you know, up a little bit yesterday, I guess, just a little. So you need to wait for it to stop falling. Is this a good price? Well, it's still a $37 stock that only makes 70 cents in next year. 70 cents a share. Only 34 cents a share this year. That makes 70 cents next year. That means it's about a $15 to $20 stock. And it's at 37 something. I still think it's very overpriced. Twitter is. Just my opinion. Of course, if it picks up its growth and it monetizes those users better, then the stock's not going down. It's going back up. How to keep emotions out of investing. We're going to talk, this is Invest Talk 101, everybody. How to keep your emotions out of your investing. Now, our emotions can steer us wrong all the time, especially when you're talking about money. And there's really only two emotions that matter in the stock market, and that's fear and greed. Fear and greed, they're the most strongest. So how do you keep your investing decisions from being based on emotions? Because humans are emotional creatures. It's going to be natural when you see your money going down. You're going to feel something. When you see your money going up, you're going to feel something there too. So, but that you can't make decisions on that. One way to do it is turn off the news. Don't watch the news. Don't watch the ticker. Don't watch your stock price every minute or every day. Don't do that. Don't jump for joy when you have big profits. And don't despair if losses go down, if your money splitters away, especially if it's all on paper. Okay, it's just, it's not real. You haven't realized it yet. So don't get too excited. I realize there are certain type of people that can't help it, but this is what you should do. Think long term, not short term. Think longer term. Unless you're a day trader or a swing trader, this is a marathon investing. It's not a sprint. It's a long-term thing. You're going to be wrong at times. I'm wrong at times. I wish I wasn't, but I am. You're going to be wrong. So what you want to do is keep the wrongness, the things when you're wrong, small. Don't make big, huge mistakes. Okay? And last, don't follow the crowd. Yeah, you want to stay with the trend, and yeah, this is kind of a hard thing to discuss. What is following the crowd? What's not? Humans like to have the crowd around them. But you don't want to have that herd mentality and you run off the cliff with the rest of the herd because you're stampeding. You don't want to have that. And we're going to talk about later on the show, hopefully we're going to talk about how to manage some of the risks. What I mean, I know people turn me off when I say, well, you got to manage your risk. Well, maybe I can get a little bit more specific and talk about some of the strategies you can adopt to manage that risk. So you want to be an above average investor, you got to think in these terms. Okay? And that's Invest Talk 101. If there's a topic you'd like me to talk about, check in by email and ask. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin.
When you're an Invest Talk insider, you can watch replays of our many wealth webinars. The latest one on boosting your growth with oil stocks. It's free. This is our insider program, and you can sign up now on investtalk.com.
Hi, my name's Steve, and this question is for Steve or Justin. Calling out of Colorado Springs, love the podcast. But I'm curious to know about the potential student loan bubble. I understand that student loan debt has ballooned to over $1 trillion. What kind of situation could this present for us as investors going in the future? Should we be worried? What kind of signs would indicate that we should be worried? Appreciate any insight you can provide. Thanks, guys.
Well, one of the things I think this huge amount of student debt is causing is it's causing the young people to postpone marriage, postpone buying a house, postpone starting a family, because they have huge debt they got to work off. I think that's one of the results. But just the debt in and of itself, what is it going to do to our economy or our market? I don't know if it's going to have that much of an impact. It is going to have an impact because when you have debt, you got to pay it off. You got to pay it off, so that's money that's not going into the economy. It's paying back a loan. But so there's going to be some repercussions, but I don't think you as an investor can say, well, how can I take advantage of it? Or how do I avoid a problem because of it? You know, a problem in the economy or stock. Well, yeah, I don't know if that's the case. I just saw before I went on air today that Hillary Clinton says that there was a headline saying Hillary Clinton has a solution for student debt. I don't know what it was or what she's saying. I don't know what the solution is. You definitely want higher education. So I'm not sure. But as an investor, I'm going to say I don't think there is something that's actionable based on the debt of student loans that you can take action on and say, well, this is what I'm going to do because of it as an investor. Just don't see that happening. Okay? Now, this market is paramount that you have risk management tools in place in this market. Something's going to happen, good or bad. And what you really want to do is be careful on the bad side. It's the good side you can handle, right? Everybody's happy that things going up. Of course, that will increase risk, and risk management is important. So what can we do? Even if the market keeps going up, you still got to have that risk management mentality. And what do I mean? Well, let's get more factual. How about just adopting a strategy to protect your profits from a downside slide? Maybe using a long-term moving average, like a 200-day moving average. If it drops below that, then you either sell short or take some chips off the table. I don't care if you use the 200-day moving average or some other method, but have a strategy that makes sense. Adopt a strategy to what should I do? Don't let the market fall on you and your positions fall, and then you say, well, I need to get out now. No, have a strategy now. Now, have it in place so that you're ready for it. Not that you're using your emotions, and that was Invest Talk 101, to make the decision. You want to make it now when you're not driven by fear because the market is falling apart. You're losing money. You set up your strategies now. And what can you watch out for? Watch for a break in the long-term trend lines. You know, you can use a 200-day moving average. You can use a 100-day moving average. You can just lose a long-term trend line. Watch for that. You also can hedge yourself. For instance, in our stock portfolio right now, we have some hedges. Not a lot, but hedges against the market. In other words, the market goes down, these hedges go up. We're basically in the market 100%. But we have a few positions that hedge it. And maybe invest in things that are not tied to the market. You know, not their positions, you know, like bonds. I'm not suggesting you buy bonds, but I'm saying bonds don't go up and down based on what the stock market does. So maybe you want some positions there. Maybe some diversification overseas. But I'll tell you this. If stocks go down strongly here in the U.S., they usually go down everywhere. So you got to take a different kind of strategy. Okay? There's other things you can do, but, you know, this could be a whole conference on this topic. Let's get your voice in on the program. For all of your money questions, 888-99-CHART is our number. You'll hear questions about stocks and 401ks, funding for kids' college, the 529 programs, the Coverdell programs. Those are college education programs. We're open to any questions about retirement or anything financial. So we're also open for your comments if you just want to make a comment about what's going on. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
Choosing the right investment products, adjusting to life's surprise events. If it's about money and it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on Invest Talk.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Donna calling from Vancouver, Washington. I'd like your insight on Intel, INTC. Is this a good time to buy? Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Intel, of course, is now a huge blue chip company, like Microsoft. These were old companies that were really the growth stories of the 1990s. Cisco, Intel, Microsoft. Now they're not. They're the blue chips of the 2000s. Intel Corporation. So you think of in terms of a blue chip company, meaning it's huge, $158 billion. It pays a dividend, 2.9%. And it's going to grow, if it grows, slowly. And so it's, you can't overpay for it. The P.E. ratio for Intel right now is 14. Well, look at all the high growth stocks these days. What are they? Twitter, and Baidu, and Google, and Netflix. What are their P.E. ratios? Those P.E. ratios are huge, most of those companies. Well, that's because they're not in a big blue chip stocks yet, even though some of them are getting there. So it's a P.E. You buy this stock, Intel, when it's cheap. Because you're really buying the, you're buying slow growth and you're really buying it for the dividend. Because it's going to pay the dividend. And it'll probably go up. Now, is it Intel a good buy? Well, it bounced right off of $30 a share. And that seemed to be a good, strong support number. Today is at $33.42, up a strong 87 cents today. But, you know, at the end of the year, this stock was at almost $38 a share. So it's fallen. So this would be a decent place to buy. It broke above the 20-day moving average, beginning of the month, and now just broke above the 50-day moving average. So it's still below the 200-day moving average. Now, you know, if you think a correction's coming in the summer, you could wait till that happens because it'll probably pull down the stock. But you should be a long-term buyer. This is a core holding. You can buy the stock right here, put it in the drawer, and in 10 years, 15 years from now, most likely, you'll have a nice return. But it's going to be probably in the single digits per year, 2 to 5%. Don't expect anything great. It's not, just can't. It can't. Has good numbers, no very low debt, good return on equity. I remember talking about Intel in the late 1990s, saying, it's got a lot of debt. It's building all these factories. It's got to keep building new factories all the time because of, you know, the Moore's Law. Remember the doubling of processors every year? So they had to build a new factory to stay. And so it was, but that's how they got to be where they are now, $158 billion company. Okay? Thanks for the call. That was Intel, INTC, everybody. INTC. We had a lot of economic numbers out today. We had the Federal Reserve have its meeting and came out with minutes. Did you notice the Federal Reserve kind of didn't change its position on interest rates? They're saying, we got the impression that they're maybe going to raise them at the end of this year, but they're going to be data dependent. So, and what happened to the data this week? Well, the GDP number came in for the first quarter, and it was up 0.2%. When everybody thought it was going to be up 1%, and initially when the quarter started, everybody thought it would be up 2.5-3%. So, and it's going to get revised. We don't know if down or up, but it's going to get revised twice before the final number is in. So the Federal Reserve does not have a lot of pressure placed on them to raise rates. Inflation numbers came out this week too, and they're very, very calm. So they're not worried about inflation. Salaries for the first quarter. Cost of living index. Salaries went up fairly strong for the first time in a long, long time. That was the quarterly report that came out this week. And that could give the Fed reason to raise rates because they worry about inflation. But all the inflation numbers have still been very, very muted. I don't think it really given them much pressure. Very interesting week of numbers. We're coming up on the last segment of the program. Let's try to get your question in. Call us now at 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to Invest Talk. What impact will taxes and inflation have on your retirement lifestyle? What if you want to go back to work? When should you take Social Security? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is how to reach InvestTalk right now.
more Americans are paying 50% or more of their income on housing costs. More Americans. What does more mean? Okay, let's look at it. In 2007, before the recession, we are up 26% from that day to today that 50% of people's income pays for housing, rent, house, whatever it is. So it's an increase of 26% from 2007 when it was already fairly high. I mean, that was kind of after the housing crash, but it wasn't during the recession. And just so you know, when I say 50% or more of their salaries, it should be no more than 30%. Anything above 30 or around 30 is considered expensive. It's excessive. So why is this happening? Well, it's kind of a sign of a poor economy. You just heard me tell you that the employment cost index for the first quarter showed a nice increase in salary. Yeah, well, that was the first time. And we're talking about 2015. So all these years, salaries haven't gone up, but housing certainly has. And in these states, more than 30% of the households pay more than 50% of their income for housing. These states. Number one, California. No big surprise there. Florida, New Jersey, New York. Those states, more than 30% of the households pay higher than 50% or more of their income to live. This is a problem. It's too expensive for most people. You know, and I think it's a problem of a poor economy, a poor recovery. You know, because salaries haven't gone up, corporations not paying enough. And we've seen the news recently where McDonald's and Target all paying they're going to raise the hourly rates for their employees. Well, because they should. We're too low, probably. Now, don't mistake me. I mean, I'm not saying we should pass laws or anything. I'm just saying that we do need to have our employees need more money. And that's why I like the fact that the manufacturing is coming back to the United States, because those are higher paying jobs. Let's answer one more call before we're done for the day. Ray in the Bay Area called 888-99-CHART.
Good afternoon, InvestTalk. I'm calling with a question in regards to when they report the stocks. They report a specific stock or the market is above the line or below the line. And my question is what does the line represent? Waiting for an answer on the Internet. Thank you. Great show.
Of course, there's no real knowing that. It depends on who's reporting it. I don't see that anywhere, above the line, below the line. If you're talking about, you know, after hours and they're reporting about earnings or sales or news of some kind, I mean, they might be referring about the close of the previous day, and the after-hours trading is above or below that close. But I've never, you know, I have not. I read a lot, and I don't see that anywhere above the line or below the line referred to by, you know, anybody in the market. So I'm not sure what reference you're talking about, above the line or below the line. Okay, so I can't really help you there. Sorry about that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, next week we're going to have much less economic news coming out than this week. What we need to watch out for in the coming weeks and into the summer is volatility. We're still going to continue having lots of volatility. Right now, the volatility has not been down. It's not been up either. It's just been kind of sideways. And when a market goes sideways for any length of time, it's going to break out, up or break down. It's going to do one or the other. Now, in the summertime, the odds are gathering that it will break down. But will that mean a return to the bear market? And I'll say the answer is probably no. I don't think so. I think it just means a correction in the market. You know, the only way we'll get a bear market is if the market sees a recession coming. I don't know if they see that yet. Before we close for the hour, maybe now is a good time to have your retirement portfolio reviewed. Once a month, I set a day aside to go up to San Jose, usually maybe a day or two sometimes. And I'll be there on Wednesday, May 6th, next week. I have one slot open. One slot open right now. So if you want to meet with me, pick up the phone or send me an email, just go to investtalk.com and click on make an appointment. I'm portfolio manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.